The nonprofits, because if we weren't, the terrorists would win. I better be Dennis Lubé, and he better be Matt Dillahunty. And he better be our special guest, Russell Glasser.
Hiya.
Otherwise, our parents have carried out a systematic and inexplicable program of deception. And we must be broadcasting live from the Dillahunty International Studios in Austin, Texas, on the 25th of August, because if we are, there's a good chance we'll precipitate world peace. And the music you heard is Frozen by Curve. Because if it isn't, then they stole that song and put it on their album. Bastards. The Nonprofits has to be sponsored by the Atheist Community of Austin and has to be a nonprofit educational organization for the promotion of positive atheism and the separation of church and state. Because that's just so selfish, altruistic, and godlike. I mean, how ironic is that? And the ACA must have a happy hour at the Dog and Duck at 7:30 every Thursday evening. And there has to be more information about it at www.atheist-community.org. And the ACA voicemail at 512-371-2911. Or else our gray, humdrum lives would make the looming specter of suicide start to look attractive. Now, it's a fact we broadcast live every other Saturday from 2 to 3:30 because we love you deeply and sincerely, and that you can participate in the broadcast by reading the instructions at www.nonprofitsradio.com and logging into the chat room. Because if you couldn't, there would be little point to the universe. And so, unless you like the void in existence itself, enjoy the show.
Hoorah.
Thank you.
Hoorah.
How's everybody doing?
I'm doing great.
I can tell.
I was writing this right up until I stuffed the paper in the car and drove over here.
And Russell's with us for a change.
I'm getting along.
Yay, Russ.
So,
3 months to go till thesis deadline.
Yay.
Yow. Any special announcements?
You're special.
Oh, thank you.
You're special to us.
I'm validated.
Would you be my neighbor?
Yes.
And Russell is special and our special guest. It seems odd special. Saying that because, you know, it's just normal that Russell shows up and we just had a little period where he didn't.
Well, we like special guests because everyone's a winner.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And if we didn't have special guests, the world might end.
And that's right.
So, we got people in the chat room. We got the, everything's being recorded. We're all up and running.
I guess we can let them guess what fallacy my intro was this time.
Yeah. We'll let them guess. I don't have to guess.
No. Because I told
I'm so you. Incredibly knowledgeable that Dennis tells me what it is every time. So what do we got to talk about?
Oh my gosh, I got a lot of several stories and a lot of viewer listener mail. Viewer mail. Yeah. So what should we start with? News?
Sure.
News is good.
All right.
New news.
Well, our president may stay the course, but the DOD doesn't. DOD stops plan to send Christian video game to troops in Iraq.
Aww.
Aww, I know. Plans by a Christian group to send an evangelical video game to U.S. troops in Iraq were abruptly halted yesterday by the Department of Defense after ABC News inquired about the program. Operation Startup, OSU, Tour, an evangelical entertainment troupe that actively proselytizes among soldiers, will not be sending the apocryphal video game in care packages as planned, according to the department. Left Behind, Eternal Forces, was inspired by the Tim LaHaye and Jerry Jenkins best-selling book series about the Battle of Armageddon, in which believers of Jesus Christ fight the Antichrist.
Can we just remind people at this point that that game totally fucking bombed?
Yes.
Well, that's why.
Yes.
I'm convinced that what they were planning on doing had nothing to do with proselytizing or, you know, getting the game to troops. It's when you see video game sales numbers, some of the best-selling games of all time really aren't that good, because what they end up doing is they package them for free with, let's say, video cards.
Right.
And then each of those units bumps up their numbers. So even though nobody actually bought the damn game, they might, you know, do a 500,000 copies.
Right. Yep. Well, not only did nobody buy that game, but, I mean, in many, many gaming publications, they got, like, the worst possible score. Some of the most scathing reviews I've ever seen.
So basically, to inflate their numbers, they're willing to inflict a crappy, crappy video game on our soldiers in Iraq.
Yeah, I'm convinced that's what they were doing. That, you know, either they had a surplus of units that they couldn't get rid of any other way, so they're going to give them to the troops.
All right. Well, that's my first curse of the day, then. Fucking assholes. God damn it.
And also, you know, there's a marginal concern that some people have that we shouldn't be giving a bunch of guys with guns in a foreign land a game that encourages them to, you know, kill people or convert them. But on the other hand, as an avid video game player myself, you know, I'm not that concerned about people playing games that involve killing imaginary guys.
Yeah. Now, it's funny, you know, it's a horrible game, said Reverend Timothy Simpson of the Christians Alliance for Progress.
Simpson,
you either kill or convert the other side. This is exactly what the Osama bin Ladens of the world have portrayed us.
What?
And that doesn't make any frickin' sense. I think he's screwing up his sentence because, well, the whole concept is screwed up.
Yeah, it's...
Dude, you both do it.
I think it's a sales number gimmick thing. I don't think it's anything else. But, you know, it got shot down finally, so that's good. So we won't be torturing our own troops, is what we've decided.
Yes. Thank you, DOD.
They're fine with torturing everybody else, but we can't torture our own troops.
No.
Right.
It just wouldn't be right.
Maybe instead we should send them copies of the Left Behind
movies. But what the soldiers do get, what they do get, in addition to the game, OSU Tour's Freedom Packages were supposed to include, and maybe they're not sending them any of this now, I don't know, were supposed to include pocket-sized editions of the New Testament, evangelical DVDs and books, baby wipes, and phone cards, according to its website.
Baby wipes?
Baby wipes!
Are you kidding? That's the most
wipes of God!
That's the most useful thing in the package.
For the soldiers? Absolutely.
Okay.
Cool, refreshing, yes.
Phone cards are nice. Okay, great. But that's a big nothing. In times like this, like during the Gulf War and whatever, eventually they'll just set up a whole bunch of phone booths and let everybody call for free anyway. This is just another way of doing it. The New Testaments, you know, I think it's kind of nice because you could, like, put it in a pocket and maybe it would stop a bullet. And then you'd have this really cool story about how God saved you from getting shot. Meanwhile, the buddy next to you did get shot. And God didn't do shit for him.
Yep.
And people who get shot with New Testaments in their pocket where the bullet hit nowhere near the New Testament don't get big stories about them.
That's right.
Oh, well.
Yay, fallacies.
So, yay. Our soldiers were not assaulted. Good. Another story?
Keep going. I'm not quite mad enough to really start ranting, and there's a couple stories that I know.
About Ben Stein, then.
No, those are the, I want to save up for rants.
This is not the actual news article. This is the article about the news article on Triangula.
This is you telling us about the news article. About the news article.
Yes, yes. So you're getting this third hand. Right.
Telling people.
Adnan Oktar, a.k.a. Harun Yahya, it should be Yo-Yo, the Turkish crackpot creationist, didn't like the fact that his critics wrote mean things about him, so he applied to a Turkish court to have all WordPress blogs blocked, and the court accepted his argument. And no one in Turkey has been able to access anything from WordPress.com for a day or two now.
I think it's WordPress.
WordPress. Terribly sorry.
It's a blogger site. Mm-hmm. Basically, he came out and spewed his creationist rhetoric, and a bunch of people at these blog sites pointed out everywhere that he was wrong. And so he said, oh, we can't have that. Let's block those sites from Turkey so nobody can see.
Harun Yahya, as far as I know, is like one of the only people who's a heavily writing creationist from a Muslim perspective. Is that who this guy is?
Yeah.
Yeah. If you go to Farangula, it'd be good and find this article, because at the bottom he says, P.S., there's a way to get around the block, and you can still read and post to WordPress blogs in Turkey if you use OpenDNS. Spread the word.
Yeah, cool.
And it's linked, but the link isn't actually written out.
For whatever reason, I don't think we can hear Russell.
Oh, no!
Testing.
You've been wasting your time.
Yeah, you're just too
except
far away.
If I'm leaning way over, which I don't care for, but okay.
All right. Another story. Miami-Dade jury rejects demon made me do it defense.
How can they do that?
I don't know. Whatever special powers Lazaro Galindo thought Satan would grant him couldn't sway a jury, which convicted him Thursday of second-degree murder in just 2 hours and 15 minutes. Galindo confessed he killed Argelio Gonzalez in 2000, claiming a demon named Candelo possessed his body and promised him special powers if he killed.
I don't see why that would be a defense.
Right.
In the old days, they used to kill people because they were in league with the devil.
Yeah.
Well, my thing is, the reason it's not a defense is, it's not that he's saying, hey, the demon took over my body and did this against my will.
Right.
He's saying a demon inhabited my body and told me he'd give me stuff if I did it.
Well, he said he was possessed, which is kind of weird, because if demons and, possession usually equals control, right? Then why would the demon have to offer an argument?
Yeah, that's my thing.
That doesn't make any sense.
Hey, I'm now in possession of your body. Would you please do me a favor and go kill this person so I can give you more power?
And even if it were true, I mean, he agreed to it is the point.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes you a criminal anyway. I mean, you can't there's also not a defense if you say, this rich hitman gave me a bunch of money and said that he'd buy me a lot of nice stuff if I killed that person.
The real travesty here is that the DA is not going to be going after the demon for prosecution as well.
Candelo is
escaped the most wanted list.
Is guilty of conspiracy, all sorts of things.
And he did it all just by virtue of being completely unbelievable.
Yeah. Now, Galindo, who defended himself during the 4-day trial, defended himself. That's always a good sign.
Oh, boy.
Had trouble presenting a coherent defense.
Yeah.
No, really? He offered a jury several scenarios, some of them conflicting, and claimed he was just a normal 19-year-old kid in 2000, albeit one who liked the occult. I don't think so.
He may have been. It's fairly normal.
Wow, just these headphones are really comfortable. I love what you bought.
You mean, along with the low-ride pants, kids also believe in Calendo?
Kalendo.
Kalendo.
Kalendo, bring me power, please. I'll kill for you.
New from Kalendo.
Superpowers 101. Come on down to Billy Bob's shop. We got Kalendo on special this week.
Yes, this did happen. From an evil person. Someone with evil intent, he said during his closing statement. But it wasn't me.
Dun, dun, dun.
Wow. Galindo had initially planned to wear Satanist garb to his trial. And had insisted on his constitutional right to do so, but he informed the court on Monday that he had found God sometime during the weekend.
Oh, he did?
Oh,
over the
weekend.
So this happened in 2000, and he's been working to present his defense all the way into 2007.
Yeah.
But he found God this weekend. Maybe it was a sincere search, you know, 6 or 7 years.
It's convenient timing, though.
At one point during his closing arguments, he claimed he never made the confession. At no time did I say I killed for Kalendo or I killed for Satan. Then he claimed he made it, only under duress, because he was in pain from deep cuts he had on his hands and legs, and he hadn't had his pain medication. Okay, this guy's just deeply, deeply stupid or insane.
Yeah, he's
or
like...
both.
Or he engineered
more
the
more,
best fake insanity plea
this sounds more
that,
and more
that was
pathetic.
Ever come up with.
That's true. That could be it. I mean, wow. Just wow. I'm not going to read anymore because it really doesn't add anything to the insanity.
Yeah, I can just kind of picture him, you know, standing there in the courtroom saying, no, I never, ever, ever said I killed him. And then somebody, like, comes up and pinches him on the arm. Oh, well, maybe I did say it, but when I was doing that, I had really bad sores on my legs.
Yeah.
What?
Say what?
All right,
it
so...
It sounds like a bunch of ad hoc rationalizations. Yeah.
I think the person's probably relatively unstable.
That sounds like. It sounds like. And that means that if he's right about... just being an average kid in 2000, they're all unstable.
Although, oddly enough, we shouldn't be ridiculing his deeply held satanic beliefs.
It's true.
He believes it. Nice.
It's true.
I mean, that's militant atheism we're practicing there,
right.
Just being, you know, dismissive and rude about his beliefs.
It's true for him.
Yeah, and that's all that
and
really
all
matters.
All beliefs are valid.
Sure.
They're
right.
All equally true.
Sure. Did this guy, was he representing himself?
Yes,
yes he was. Figures, don't it?
Let this be a lesson to you, kids.
That's right. Don't represent yourself in court.
Yeah.
At least not if you're batshit crazy.
Of course, you know, if you are crazy, how are you going to know?
Let's see. Ah, here's an interesting one. There's a... Apparently, let's see, ABC News has a story on the Slidell case that doesn't have much in the way of new information, but does have some interesting quotes, like this one. The town is represented in the suit by the Christian-inspired Alliance Defense Fund, which might be called the, well, right-wing version of the ACLU. Wow.
I thought that was the ACLJ.
ACLJ. Yes, that would be them. Apparently, there's a picture of Jesus.
The right-wing version of the ACLU would be something that takes rights away.
Apparently, there's a picture of Jesus in some courthouse, I imagine, and somebody's trying to get rid of it, which makes perfect sense. I mean, it's Jesus. You shouldn't have, you know...
For Christ's sake, what are you thinking?
For Christ's sake. But their arguments are interesting. Let's see.
Let's see what.
The circumstances surrounding the Jesus painting make the Slidell case intriguing. Because the painting is the only display in the courthouse lobby, aside from a picture of the courthouse's founding judge, the ACLU believes it's a religious symbol. The ACLU is trying to have it removed, right?
I don't think it matters that it's the only picture outside of the presiding judge.
Yeah, it doesn't. However, the judge and his supporters flatly dispute this. Mike Johnson, an ADF senior legal counsel based in Louisiana, told ABC News the display is legal because there's no intent to advance a religion. It's just a picture of Jesus. The clear secular purpose for this thing was to decorate the walls, Johnson said. This is not some sort of ulterior motive to advance Christianity.
So those pictures that Matt showed during his lecture of hell, would those be appropriate for decorating the walls too?
Sure, they'd just be decorations.
I think we should, you know, advocate putting up like a black light Velvet Elvis.
Or nudity.
Right. Sure.
I think it's just decoration. Yeah, I mean, it's not meant to symbolize anything.
Right, so the author here is amazed because the interior decorating excuse? Why didn't I think of that? It's purely coincidental that it happens to be a picture of Jesus holding a Bible. And they put those big letters under it spelling out a message, not because they believe the message and want others to as well, but just because the gold lettering matched the edging on the wallpaper perfectly. That painting really tied the room together.
Man.
You know what they need to do is they need to put a kiosk in the corner that shows porn all day long.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Because that's not really advocating sex. It's just, you know, it's a nice looking little box
right.
there that makes it's good for the public
with
to interact with.
A pleasant image of the human body.
You know, it's a nice nudity, maybe.
Yeah,
you know,
human beautiful. Body. Right. They seem blissfully unaware of the contradiction at the center of their position. On one hand, they claim that the picture has nothing to do with religion at all. It's just a bit of decorative flair that should not be viewed as any kind of religious message at all. On the other hand, demanding that it be taken down is an attack on religion. So they say, you're attacking religion if you want to take this picture down.
Yeah.
Is it a religious picture? Oh, no, it's just a decoration. Look. Pick one. Is it a religious issue or isn't it? Well, that was a mess of an article. I'm sorry.
I kind of alluded to this.
It was not the
earlier.
News article that I wanted it to be.
I kind of alluded to this earlier when I made my little snide comment about militant atheism and ridiculous mm-hmm. ideas, and that's because that this week Michael Shermer posted an open letter. Dawkins, Dennett, Harris, etc. And he was basically, his basic point was, we need to not demonstrate irrational exuberance.
Mm-hmm.
And my response to Shermer is, please demonstrate that the people you're talking to are, in fact, demonstrating irrational exuberance.
Right.
You don't just get to assert that they're being irrational and reactionary and militant and not provide examples. And he didn't bother to. All he did was say that movements that are anti don't survive. Oh, really? I mean, okay. you know, sobriety movements, you know, they're anti.
Jeez,
oh, but they're also pro-sobriety. Well, you know what? We're pro-science. We're pro-reason. We're pro-rational thought.
Gosh, we don't have slaves in the U.S. anymore.
You know, there was that thing, I'm trying to remember.
Must have been someone anti-slavery.
The American Revolution.
Yeah.
Anti-British. Yeah.
Hey, let's start.
That kind of survived.
You know, if it wasn't for the fact that I actually like Michael Shermer for the most part, I might start an anti-Shermer campaign and see how well that survives.
Well, he's just wringing his hands. He doesn't like the con. He
be
doesn't
an
like the
Shermer campaign. It would just be a pro not Shermer.
Yes.
He's trying to avoid conflict.
What he's done.
Oh, boy.
Is. He has, in a very limited sense, I'm not saying he's gone off the deep end,
right.
but he has, in a limited sense, bought into the argument of these claims of militant atheists and fundamentalist atheists, and he's saying, look, you know, we really should be working together and getting along and trying to, you know, do that. No, I don't have a problem with that. I'm sure that the Reverend Barry Lind and I agree on a great many things, and we could probably work side by side on things. But when he tells me that he actually still believes that Jesus existed and was the Son of God, I'm going to explain to him why I think that is an absolutely ridiculous notion.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean I don't like him. It doesn't mean we can't agree on things. And it doesn't mean that I'm just in a position of being contrary.
Yeah.
I didn't say, oh, and he made this thing about, you know, if we don't want to be prejudged by Christians, we shouldn't prejudge them. Hey, we're not prejudging shit.
Right.
They've judging.
They've had 2,000 years to establish their bona fides. We're just addressing them.
Yeah. For me to say, I'm sorry,
pre-judge.
Your claims don't hold water, and I think that you're, you know, delusional, that your brain's been poisoned by these religious ideas and has made you unwilling and unable to consider things rationally and reasonably, I'm offering my sincere opinion, and it's not just some exuberant attack, and it's certainly not irrational.
Yep.
It was really annoying to see
that
this
appeasement
week.
Is really...
And, you know, I'm not really directing this at Michael Shermer right now, but a lot of you know, a lot of very hostile, unpleasant, nasty Christians who say all kinds of bad things about atheists all the time go out there and advise atheists to be taken more seriously by being nicer.
Yes.
Right. Oh, we see how well that's worked.
Yeah.
Or just shut up.
Yeah.
Shut up's probably my favorite comeback.
That was really effective for last 2,000 years.
And you notice that these people just don't practice what they preach. I mean, you know, what they would like is the freedom to go off and bash atheists all the time and have the atheist politely say, oh, well, you know, sorry, old chap. You know, I don't feel that's terribly fair to me, but...
We both have our opinions, and they're, you know, they're equally valid.
I respect your opinion. Yes, well, you're going to burn in hell for yours. Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's not like the two scenarios aren't even equivalent. And let's just for a moment look at the whole creation evolution thing.
What scenarios are you talking about?
I'm talking about the way believers comment on atheism in general,
right,
versus
the way
these
comment.
Atheists who are being targeted by whoever, including possibly Shermer in this.
Yeah.
Let's just look at the creation versus evolution issue, because that ties into a couple other stories real quick. The creationists, they really are attacking evolution and producing nothing positive to support their claims.
Right.
That is their whole shtick.
Yes.
That is what the Discovery Institute does. It is tearing down science, standards of science. It is not advocating anything more than sheer conjecture on its part as to what reality really is.
They don't have a wing that publishes experiments and tries to, you know, tries to produce scientific results. They only have a book writing wing and a press release writing wing.
Right.
And
then
a hypothesis.
You've got anybody who's a scientist. Anybody who's a biologist, you know, anybody who is trying to advocate and support evolution and protect scientific ideas from irrational attacks from creationists, they get labeled as the attackers. Oh, you're just anti-creationism. You're just anti – you're in this naturalistic, materialistic, physical whatchamajigger.
And your little box.
And we can see this clearly in the movie that's coming out in February.
Uh-huh.
And we're going to be privileged to see a brand new movie that stars Ben Stein and portrays intelligent design creationism as the cool rebel oppressed by the stodgy old Darwinist bullies. Did you know?
I can't think of anyone lamer to play a cool rebel than Ben Stein.
Right.
You know.
Oy.
Evolution is now being taught in schools because anyone.
Basically, his position is that, you know, and he's going to get some people to comment or do whatever, but it's that big science has excluded from classroom and laboratory anybody advocating intelligent design. And you know what? He's right, and so are the people who are doing the excluding. Science excludes non-science. That's the way it works. We don't just let an idea in because you happen to think that it's true. You need to actually demonstrate that there's some good reason for your idea to be considered science. You don't just get to come in and say, well, you've excluded God a priori. Yes, we have, because there's no demonstration that a God exists, that there's no reason to include that factor in any hypothesis. Oh, well, it's just materialistic, you know, naturalism that you're doing, and you're excluding the supernatural. Yes, we are to some degree, because if your supernatural doesn't affect the natural world in any way that we can detect, measure, analyze, then it's completely fucking useless.
Yeah.
And
if we propose something like that, well... And there's nothing to base that structure on, then we've just made it up, obviously. Yeah.
So what's happened here is that science has done what science is supposed to do and established criteria that produce consistent, reliable results that tell us and help us understand the universe, define the universe, interact and you know, progress our knowledge about reality. And somebody's got their little panties in a twist because their ridiculous idea has been excluded from this forum.
Oh, poor, poor babies.
You know what? It's really simple. All you need to do is demonstrate within the boundaries of science why your idea should be included and discussed among credible scientists, and it will.
Right.
Well, maybe the movie will present the first evidence for intelligent design ever.
I'm not holding my breath.
You'll remember this actually isn't the first time that Ben Stein. Maybe you won't remember, but I distinctly remember that in 2001, after the 9/11 attack, he wrote something about this horrible, godless act.
Oh boy!
And the result,
not realizing it was a godful act.
Oh, it was an extremely godful act. It was one of the most godful acts ever.
Yeah.
And this doesn't surprise me at all coming out of Ben Stein.
Oh,
I mean, I've heard him try. Heard him express his opinions, and he's got this facade as this very stodgy, intelligent, well-educated guy.
Yes, he sounds very droll.
Yes.
Well, you know, and he's a relatively smart guy. There was the Win Ben Stein's money thing where he demonstrated
that. Was he all that smart?
That he has a fairly reasonable grasp on trivia.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it hides a, you know, irrational asshole.
You know, my thing is that, you know, okay, you're perfectly fine. It's okay for you to believe that there's an intelligent designer. The question isn't whether or not you get to believe it or whether or not you think it's reasonable. The question is whether or not anybody else should.
Right.
And that's something you have to demonstrate and not simply assert. And it's something that if you want to be included in the scientific process, you have to play by science's rules. You don't get to bend science's rules so that your particular pet theory can fit. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that came out during the Dover trial, we had this exact same discussion where Michael Behe's on the stand, and they're asking him, well, under your definition of, you know, what should be included in science, wouldn't that also include astrology?
Uh-huh.
And he said, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Great. Why should we pollute science?
Right.
For your pet beliefs.
Yeah, you notice nobody's not going out making a movie about how astrology is excluded from science class.
Well, not that they wouldn't like one.
But the funny thing, I think P.Z. Myers pointed this out, is that the Discovery Institute is really excited about this, of course.
Oh, God.
I'm not sure who's funding it. I think it was like the Institute for Creation Research or something like that. But, you know, P.Z. Myers pointed out, why are they excited about this when the argument that he's making in the movie is that schools don't give enough respect to religion? He's quite explicitly saying that. And the Discovery the Discovery Institute has made a career out of saying, no, design has nothing to do with religion at all.
So we're back to the painting of Jesus.
Right.
Right.
It's completely secular.
It's a big, you know, pay no attention to the man behind the curtain thing.
If you go to expelledthemovie.com right now, you will find Ben Stein's first and only blog entry, followed by well over 500 comments, the vast majority of which are very reasonably explaining to him why he's an idiot.
Good.
It was down for most of last night, but it's back up now. I just checked it out.
Cool.
So I'm curious, kind of tying these bits together, and I don't have any illusions about who's actually listening to the show, but if somebody could get a hold of Michael Shermer and ask him whether or not we should sit around and be respectful of Ben Stein and Expelled and be considerate to his point of view, when what we're really seeing is, and I don't think this movie is going to do particularly well.
No.
But it's an attempt
right, to make
use popular media to push an agenda that has no business in science.
Right.
Well, they're entitled to do that.
Yeah.
Although, but you know, you'd think they could get a bigger star than Ben Stein.
Yeah, the point isn't whether or not they're entitled to do it. The point is that for some reason we seem to be, even with some atheists, being encouraged to kind of not
respond.
Yeah,
does Shermer not want us to point out the errors in the movie?
Well, I don't
for fear we'll insult someone?
I don't think he doesn't want people to respond, because he does that himself all the time.
Like, then what the hell?
You know, doesn't he run Skeptic Magazine or something?
Sure.
I'm not sure what his deal is. I mean, does he think that we should respond to
No, it's about the way we respond.
Okay. Well, would Shermer respond the same way to us if we were arguing against astrology? If like Dawkins and Hitchens and all those had books out against, you know, pointing out the idiocy of astrology? Would he be responding the same way? Or is he granting religion special dispensation?
Maybe it's because religion is powerful. And astrology maybe
isn't.
Kind of isn't, yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, and that not only explains why somebody might be giving special treatment to religion, but also why the arguments in opposition to religion are often so impassioned. You know, you get people accusing Dawkins of being, you know, Darwin's Rottweiler or overly polemic or whatever else, and they're mistaking passion and sincerity about ideas that are important and critical. They're mistaking that for fundamentalism. It's not fundamentalism. Fundamentalism is dogmatically supported.
And also, people like to say that if you're angry, you've lost the argument.
Yeah.
But of course, that's bullshit. Your emotional state has nothing to do with the validity or invalidity of your argument.
You know,
it's the points you're making.
If somebody is angry because some child molester managed to exploit the legal system and get away with it, and they make an impassioned plea, are they just demonstrating irrational exuberance?
Fundamentalist bigotry against... No.
I mean, clearly, they're opposed to the situation, and they're animated, and they're passionate, so that must be irrational
exuberance.
They must
be militant. They must be... Yeah.
The other thing, and Brian Sapien from Rational Response Squad brought this up, is why is Dennett on this list? I mean, he makes an open letter to Dawkins, Dennett, Harris, and Hitchens. Mm-hmm. Why is Dennett on the list? I don't think anybody could make the case that Dennett has even been overly antagonistic towards religion. His is a much more philosophical, scholarly approach to, you know, the real view of religion. And Dennett even concedes points that Hitchens may not, which is that religion may have at one time been essential and may still be essential for some people. I mean, if you're incapable of evaluating situations.
To say that Dennett has made an attack on the basis of religion. I mean, you know, he's out
what
there
was
with
the title of his book.
He's out there
breaking the spell religion is a natural phenomenon.
Right.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, you know, he may not be saying religious people are wicked or anything,
right,
which a lot of the people aren't. But he is saying, you know, there's no question that this is just a natural phenomenon and those people are wrong.
So, we'll rant on one more thing because it still kind of ties into this creation and evolution
thing.
What
have you got?
Answers in Genesis once a year does this kind of essay competition. And the essay that won this year is called Evolution of Ethics, How the Biology Class Undermines Morality 101. The winner got a $50,000 scholarship.
$50,000.
To Falwell's Liberty University.
Oh, they're screwed.
So, I mean, it's not a real $50,000.
No.
You know, because
it's
not
a fake,
a real
worthless
university.
$50,000.
You know, if this person is homeschooled, it's going to be the best segue ever into my next topic.
Yeah.
is she?
I don't know. I'll look. Her name's Karen Hudson. And she starts her lecture by telling the story from the Columbine incident, where Casey Bernal said yes when Cassie said yes when Eric Harris asked her if she believed in God. That was just before he murdered her at Columbine High School in 1999. She included this in her essay, despite the fact that it's not true. This is a BS urban legend that sprung up during the Columbine incident.
Very quickly.
And spread all over the place. I'll read you the first little bit of her essay. "My quest to answer Darwin began during a casual conversation with a friend. Annabelle was praising her biology teacher's coverage of evolution. When I explained my doubts about the theory, she replied with textbook authority. The diagrams of evolving plant and animal life look so realistic, and the explanation seems so logical.
And it made me feel bad.
While I tried to persuade her that evolution did not fit in a Christian worldview, I would first need to disarm her Darwinian arguments. Unfortunately,
brother,
I didn't have the tools. And so," and I'll stop her essay there, "she went on a quest to get the tools, and you know what she discovered? She still doesn't have the frickin' tools. She has logical fallacies. She has gross misunderstandings. She has appeals to authority. She began with her assumption of a Christian worldview being the correct one. And you cannot build a good case against a scientific position if you're starting with fantasy land."
Right.
But she has $50,000.
That's right.
But and scholarship money. So she can listen to my intros and think them, oh, man, solid lockdown on logic there.
She part of her essay includes, quote, "Evolution replaces God, purpose, and morality with nature, chance, and relativism. No wonder violence and vileness wreak havoc in schools and society today."
Oh, brother.
Basically, her argument against evolution is that it takes away God, destroys morals, and it's the reason why we have Columbine incidents.
It's a bad circumstance.
You know, and this is worth a full scholarship. Granted, she's going to end up going to Liberty University because of this. But
which I think is worth negative education.
But, this is a real deal in the sense that not only are they putting money behind, you know, Ben Stein's movie.
They're ruining the lives of kids.
Yeah, they're sending out kids to these universities just because. Not because they wrote a particularly good essay that is full of facts and evidence and good arguments, but because this essay properly towed the line of the creationist movement.
Supported their ideology.
It spewed back every argument that you can find at sites like Answers in Genesis in a format. Plus, she's adorable.
Oh, I'm sure.
So, I mean, you know, how can you go wrong? You've got a cute little girl who can be your spokesman.
Do you mind if I get political for a second?
Oh, sure.
Uh-oh. Careful
it's
now.
The Bush administration. It's like the it's like Iraq being set up with people who are in charge of major important infrastructure rebuilding things by 22-year-old kids who just graduated from have been members of this right-wing think tank. The point is not to reward knowledge or rigor or academic honesty. The point is to acknowledge cronies.
Right.
And
well, they'll phrase it as rewarding loyalty.
Right, but not in this case. What they're doing is taking somebody who has absolutely no clue what she's talking about and giving her the appearance of legitimacy by throwing a pile of money at her so that other parents can then say, ah, look what happens if you believe this stuff.
Yeah. Well, they're rewarding loyalty. Loyalty over
I have
facts.
A slight correction.
Loyalty over anything.
The part that I read wasn't from her essay proper. That was actually from the cover letter to her essay. Her essay actually, you know, begins with the Columbine story and then goes on to attack Darwin's Descent of Man and if Darwinism is speculative, why is it brandished as science? That was her first major argument. If this is just a big ass guess, why are they teaching it in science classroom?
And
my
mental misunderstanding. Good grief!
The thing that baffles me is that And it doesn't really baffle me. I mean, I've been in similar shoes
know
to hers.
Why?
But however much a guess a religious person thinks evolution is, even though it's inaccurate, I can understand that.
Sure.
However much of a guess it is, God is by definition infinitely bigger as a guess.
Right. Infinitely more speculative. It has nothing behind it.
I'm dumbfounded when I hear this over and over again. And I know that, there are people who are pushing this and trying to get it into schools on a regular basis. And that's probably what bothers me the most. That here you've got a young girl who's, walking lockstep with Answers in Genesis. So she gets rewarded and she's going to go to Liberty University. But the people who are trying to push this and make it mainstream, they're trying to make sure that all universities end up like Liberty University.
Oh, of course.
And that all high school science students end up like this young girl.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. It shows that they win.
You know, the long-term
if they get that.
Effect of that is that it undermines the principle of education.
Yeah.
I mean, it gives the impression that that everybody has their own
way of teaching. Yeah.
And
it's all relative.
there is no actual standard to live up to in any case.
Except the Bible.
There is no such thing. Those scientists have no business telling us what science is. Anybody should be able to teach whatever they want and call it real education.
Right. It's like the quote from Jesus Camp where the mother's teaching her son. And she says, here's an interesting thing. Science really can't prove anything. Isn't that neat? And he's like, yeah, that's just what Dad said.
Right. That's just what my daddy said.
It just drives me nuts.
And well, she's married to him. What a coincidence.
Hmm. So should I make the blanket homeschooling is evil statement? Oh, no. I've already done that and gotten in trouble for it.
And it's time for me to admit that I had an agenda in coming here today.
Uh-oh.
Your ideology
is showing.
I still get all the mail from the radio show. Sometimes I even answer it because I know you guys are busy. And I saw that one a while ago about the from the person who was incensed that you made humorous insults towards homeschooling. And I know you don't mean that all homeschoolers are evil or stupid or anything like that.
They're not all evil or stupid.
They're mostly not. In fact, I'd say nearly all of them have very good intentions.
What's that about the road to hell?
Yeah.
And by the way, I want to apologize in advance to our listeners who may be homeschooling, because I think that you guys, our listeners are very, very smart. And they are probably the glorious exception to what I think of as the general trend in homeschooling. But this has been an issue that's been on my mind for a while. I've been going over it on my blog since about 2 months ago. And the more I hear about homeschooling, the less impressed I am with the whole concept. So I got into this interesting argument, which now on my blog more or less ends with me telling the other guy to fuck off. And if you like that
as
kind of thing,
these arguments are often want to do,
and would like to see how the argument actually got to that point, then you can check out kazeemscorner.blogspot.com, which is linked off of the nonprofit's webpage, isn't it?
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Quick recap of the arguments that I started making a couple of months ago is basically teaching is hard, okay? I mean, it's not that simple a job. Unlike a lot of people I know, I have enormous respect for teachers at all levels. I have a good friend who's who until recently was a junior high teacher, basically got chased out of the business by what he saw as overwhelming bureaucracy, and now the state of New Mexico is poorer by one really good junior high teacher.
Mm-hmm.
His parents have both been lifelong teachers. My parents both taught college at different points in their lives. I think that teaching is a really noble profession. And I also think that public schools get a bad rap.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's clear to everybody that American public schools are horribly underperforming, and they're also saddled with this albatross of No Child Left Behind, which is this scheme whereby more and more every year, this kind of started out in Texas, teachers are saddled with this requirement to teach to this bigger and bigger standardized test, to the point where they don't have time to actually teach non-test related skills. They don't have time to, introduce material that's not necessarily on the curriculum, draw in from personal experience, which I think is what effective teachers do.
Right.
They're not just unable. They're not just stuck teaching the tests. There's a lot of other problems that are going on in schools because of No Child Left Behind, where cagey accounting procedures where students retake tests or take tests at different grades. The ones who don't score well on the tests are pushed back a grade in order to take a different test. I mean, it's just this big
and
nightmare.
And also, if you read a book called Freakonomics, which I enjoyed very much, you find that there's actually a lot of evidence that teachers have an incentive to help their students cheat.
Yeah.
That was an anagram.
Whoa.
There's lots of evidence that teachers help their students cheat on the standardized tests. And the reason is that basically
money.
They've set up an incentive system where teachers who whose students do badly on the tests are less compensated and so on.
Oh, right.
And
not
school
the
districts
effect that we were aiming for, you know?
Yeah, there's an exploitable hole. Great one.
And school districts that do poorly on tests suffer for lack of funding. As a matter of fact, here in the Austin area, there's one school district that did so miserably, I think, that they're going to be rolled up into some other school district. So really, you're going to have this kind of accounting juggling system that's focused on tests.
Yeah.
And also, you've got, in the cheating sense, it's more and more of not just teaching to the test, but let's say we do a review right before you take the test.
Mm-hmm.
And the review is, I'm going to read you every question on the test and give you the answers, and so we're testing your recall for about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Right.
Now,
or
when
in
you're
so,
in, when
or
you're,
in some cases, like in Freakonomics, the teachers actually go through the papers with a key and like pick this small section where they change everybody's answers to the right ones in the class.
Mm.
I mean, not enough that it would raise red flags,
right?
Although in this case it did, and that's why we know about it.
Yeah.
But you know, just a small localized bump of a few points across the board.
Now, if you're going to create this kind of system that can be gamed, it's best to ask a professional game designer, especially of massively multiplayer games. Now, put it past them first. They'll go, oh, that's an exploitable hole. Ooh, that'll... they'll do this to get past that. And, oh, they'll exploit that to make tons of money. You know,
yeah. All right. So public education has problems.
Yes, unfortunately.
It's no big secret that we in America are pathetically underperforming the abilities of students in other countries. Other countries which also have public schools.
Yeah.
They just do it competently. I mean, there's this bogus comparison that says, oh, well, I mean, you know, if public schools are doing badly, then the solution is to get rid of public schools and replace it with something else, like vouchers in some cases. Ignoring the fact that if you want to do something successful, then you model it on something else that's already been demonstrated as successful and probably right. build on that. And what's successful is funding education.
Right. And our public school system did work at one point, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
why don't we go back to that?
Our test scores have been getting worse, and that means that at some point they were better.
Yeah.
And I'm not the kind of person who, like, romanticizes any particular time period.
Right. So it's not like you're saying, oh, our schools are performing badly and equate, you know. For me to be consistent, I would have to say, oh, yeah, abstinence-only stuff works badly, so, you know, we should abandon it. Well, yeah, we should abandon it, because that's never been shown to work.
Yeah.
But public education, it has been shown to work, and it is working, but we're losing it.
Yeah.
We're not maintaining it.
We're becoming really bad at it. Now,
we're managing it badly.
Now, let me get to homeschooling. Not all homeschoolers, contrary to what the impression you might get from watching Jesus Camp, for example, not all homeschoolers are religious zealots.
Well, darn it, I prefer to think they are, because that makes it a real simple issue.
Now, don't get me wrong. According to a lot of homeschooling organizations, like a very large number of... 70% of homeschoolers in Texas are homeschooling primarily for religious reasons. That's a big number.
Religious reasons.
But there's still a lot more who aren't. They've just got a sincere desire to see their kids learn better than they would be in public school.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them pull it off. How many of them pull it off is something that's really, really hard to find out, because one of the features of homeschooling is that there aren't any standards, and there isn't a body that's authorized to go and find things out about homeschooling. What was that you said on the TV show a little while ago, Matt? There's a standard that you have to be following a curriculum of some sort?
Yes.
But
the specifics, it is, okay, for example, in Texas, homeschools are considered private schools, so there's no attendance requirements, and there's no testing requirements, and there's no requirements for the person who's doing the teaching to be qualified in any particular area or to demonstrate this competence. Also, there is a curriculum requirement that you must teach, I think it's reading, spelling, math, and good citizenship. You must have a curriculum that includes those. However, there's nothing in there with regard to results to grade level performance. So, for example, if you've got a third grader or a third grade book, you could probably still teach that third grade book all the way, you know, till they're 18 and no longer required to be schooled. And the law is written in such a way that you must have a curriculum, and you must actually be following it and not just pretending to be following it. However, there's no way to verify this. In order for the government or any representative to come and investigate, they have to get a warrant. And if they do so, well, first of all, how are they going to do it? Under what probable cause?
Right.
You're going to end up needing some kind of witness. And second of all, when they come in, the teachers aren't required, or the homeschool teachers, parents, whatever, they're not required to have any attendance records to demonstrate. Uh-huh. They're not required to have any test or grade results to demonstrate. All that you'll ever find out is, yes, I'm actually using the curriculum, and no, you can't talk to my child about it.
And there, one of the things that I found out in conducting this argument about homeschooling is that there are these groups like, the National Homeschooling. I don't remember the names of them right now. But, I mean, you know, there's these groups which, when you dig beneath the surface, are pretty much all fundamentalist Christian groups.
Yeah,
You know, they disguise it really well on their front pages, but then you find articles all over the place of them supporting actual Christian dominionist causes and lobbying to outlaw gay marriage.
Oh,
and that's
grief.
A worrying thing for parents who would sincerely like to homeschool their kids to improve the education, but then find that the resources that are available to them are like these crazy groups. Like, what do we got here? The National Home Education Research Institute and the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, which at first I thought were two different things, but then it turns out they're actually linked to each other pretty strongly. So they're not even separate authorities from each other. And they're a dominionist group. You know, they're some of these people that would like to...
Take over
and replace stuff with biblical laws.
And when we go to try and find statistics about how well students perform and everything, a lot of those statistics end up coming from those groups.
Guys.
And the studies are very small, and they're inherently flawed.
Right. Oh, I'm really going to trust them in the first place.
They're flawed for one thing right from the get-go because the system itself is flawed.
Well, let me give you an example. There's a guy named Lawrence Rudner who is with, I believe, the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, and he conducted a study which, if you ask about statistics on homeschooling, odds are somebody will point you to this exact study, because there really aren't very many of them. The study says that there were a bunch of students who took a test administered by Bob Jones University, who I'm sure we're all familiar with. Until recently, I found out Bob Jones University was accredited last year. Did you know they're accredited?
Are they accredited by
accredited by a Christian group, but
right.
It happens to be a Christian group that's recognized by the, you know, by the national accreditation thing that colleges take seriously. So until last year, you could have said these guys aren't accredited because, you know, they're religious.
But they found her and run.
Now they are.
Yeah, great.
So Bob Jones University is a big provider of tests that homeschoolers take. And what Lawrence Rudner discovered in this study is that homeschooled kids did better on average than public and private school kids. Mm-hmm. Problem with this is the test was voluntary. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's bad not to force people to take a test, but if you want to get a fair cross-section, about the worst way you could do it was to go to a bunch of homeschoolers and say, hey, I've got a test. Do you want to take it? No,
yeah,
we don't do tests.
Let's consider, for example, the tax test that happens here in Texas.
Right.
All public school students are required to take it.
Every one of them.
And it's comparable to some homeschooler tests, which are voluntary. And then you compare the results. If instead we allowed schools to have the tax test be voluntary,
their
what do you think you'd
go
see?
Way up.
Their scores would go through
because
the roof.
Because people who suck at the tax test would not take it.
Those scores, they would either not take it or those scores would never be seen. And the people you'd have taking the test would be kids that are smart, that are concerned about their education, that want to go on to college, that are going to perform well in the test.
They slammed it right from the start.
So, you know, and now you've got a bigger pool to draw from. So not only are the scores going to go up, but you may find that actually their scores on a voluntary basis are better than those for the homeschool.
Right.
That's what you need to be comparing, apples to apples.
So, I mean, in response, and this is another really good example of what I'm talking about, and this isn't a fundamentalist statistic, so I trust it a little more. But this guy wrote to me, and he said, hey, I think you should know the kind of test you're looking for is the ACT, because the ACT keeps track of who all takes the ACT test and what their educational background is.
Ah, right.
And we found out, I mean, according to the ACT's numbers, when I went and looked it up, no, don't laugh yet, because it's going to sound good for homeschooling at first.
Oh, right.
They found out that homeschoolers averaged about, oh, I didn't print the numbers, but they were about 1 to 3 points higher. Uh-huh. And it's, I'm not sure what the scale is, but it's a fairly low score, like 30 or 50 points right. total. So 1 to 3 points is pretty significant. So homeschoolers in general
did a little better
than all other students, which includes public and private schools. What I then went and looked up on the ACT site was how many of the people are actually taking those tests. Here are the numbers. 2,610 people the year in 1998, the year that these numbers come from. Mm-hmm. 2,500 people were homeschoolers who took the test. 995,038 overall took the test. Mm-hmm. Now, you'll notice the first number was smaller, but that's probably because there's fewer homeschoolers than people who are in schools. So I wanted to go and find out how many people were homeschooling. And what I found out was, well, again, according to a homeschool group, but I'm going to take their word for it this time. Right. About somewhere between 700,000 and 1.5 million kids take the are homeschoolers, compared to about 50 million kids overall. Now, when you do the math, it turns out that about 2% of all students are taking the ACT test, but only about 0.1% of homeschoolers are taking the ACT test. That means that if you're not homeschooled, you're 20 times more likely to take this college entrance exam than if you are.
And if you do, your score is going to be comparable, though slightly lower, to the 0.01% of homeschoolers who actually bothered to take the test.
Right.
Oh, God.
So in other words, if you're a homeschooler who's good at tests, trying to get into college
right.
and taking the exam because you're preparing for college, odds are you're going to do a good job.
Right.
But if you're just some homeschooler picked at random, there's all kinds of things of different philosophies of homeschooling. There's actually something called unschooling, which means...
that sounds dangerous.
Let the kid do pretty much whatever they want.
Oh, boy.
You know, with some kind of purpose or general guidelines in mind, uh-huh. but, you know, don't have a curriculum, which is why I'm wondering about what you said about requiring students to have a curriculum. Because I know that unschooling is a really big movement, including in Texas.
Well, they're going to have to do it under the table then, because If somebody managed to get a warrant, you'd actually have to show them your curriculum.
Yeah.
Right.
And claim that you're actually using it.
Yeah.
That's it.
And,
now, with no testing requirements, here's my thing, mm-hmm. and this is just kind of a general overall for the homeschooling issue.
Yeah.
If you've got – not every parent is going to be qualified to teach homeschool.
Well, not every parent is going to be good at it. There aren't really any qualifications.
There aren't any qualification requirements, but I think that there are some qualifications that we could all kind of recognize. But in case, yeah. not all parents are going to be good at it. Also, not all kids are going to be good at it. They're not going to be good in school.
Right.
So if you have a kid that's doing well in school, but you want them to do better, and you happen to be qualified and can provide them a better education outside, then homeschooling may be a good option for you. However, most homeschoolers only homeschool for a couple hours a day.
Right.
And like Levi's mom in Jesus Camp, you know, their idea of a quality education is, you know, teaching from this fundamentalist textbook from a non-accredited publishing mill.
Well, that's not where I was going.
Like, but yeah, okay,
for the parents who actually care about their kids' education,
right.
There are certain things they can get in public schools that they're not going to get in the separationist homeschool environment.
Yeah.
Now, if you're that concerned about your kids' education, then why not put them in public school and spend an hour or two educating them in addition.
Yeah.
But if you do pull out for public school and you are someone who sincerely cares about the education of your child and you're doing it because you think you can provide a better education at home than they can get in school, then you should have absolutely no objection to standards and requirements, including required testing and qualifications for you as a teacher. If you're honest and sincere that you want your kid to get a better education and you think you can provide it, then you need to be able to prove it.
Right.
No homeschools should have to meet the minimum requirements of public schools. Same as – and private schools should too. There's a minimum set of requirements that we should require for the education of every child in the country.
I mean, like I said, I think standardized testing is really overblown in our public education system already. So I think that what the minimum standards should be dialed back a bit. Reevaluated as exactly what kind of standards they are. What's the nature of them? Do they come from a multiple choice test or what? But homeschoolers have no requirements at all, and they resent the – I mean, based on my limited experience with talking to homeschoolers on my blog, they resent the idea that anyone, especially the government, would tell them what to teach.
Mm-hmm.
But they're really happy to quote government statistics on how badly public schools are doing, because that supports
right.
their case. Which leads me to believe that there, in addition to the 70% of homeschoolers who do it for religious reasons, I'm starting to suspect that well over half of the other homeschoolers are mainly doing it on the because they're libertarians and it's on the general grounds that anything government-related is bad.
Now, my big thing is that...
That's
a
guess, though.
If it's a good thing, you should be able to demonstrate it's a good thing. If you're actually doing something better, you should be able to demonstrate it, and it shouldn't have to do with monkeying with statistics or anything. Right. We got like 15 minutes left and a whole bunch of listener mail.
I just want to say, actually, last thing is that buried somewhere in the national homeschooling education or home education research institute or something, they're... One of the charming articles they have that I linked to in the discussion was a hypothetical dialogue between a parent and a social worker who comes snooping around trying to check if they're doing anything.
Right.
And this is to train parents to stonewall the social worker and keep him from coming in the house at any cost and finding out something incriminating, including, of course, they're advocating that you beat your kids.
Oh, charming.
So, anyway, that's what I think about homeschooling. I think that there are some fine parents out there who are probably doing a good job teaching their own kids. But the odds seem to be way more stacked against you than homeschooling literature would indicate.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I'm done.
So now let's crank through some listener mail.
Okay, I'm going to do some
and
real
I'm not
quick
gonna
stuff
here.
I'm
not going to be here to answer it.
All right, let's see here. I'm not going to give this guy's name because he's brave to write.
Wait a minute. They're actually harassing us about how little time is left and how we haven't gotten a listener mail yet. So
all
maybe
right.
we should just
My
skip
fault.
Listener mail altogether.
Wow, no.
All right, let's do it.
All right. This person writes, "Hey, guys, I'm an ex-Muslim and just want to say thank you for your great program. Here in Europe, most people see the U.S. as a religious country, contrary to their secular democracy. So after September 11th era for me, it was quite a surprise to know you guys and other American atheists can still speak out. I wish we ex-Muslim could have that kind of freedom to come out and say that we don't believe in an old myth. But even in Europe, it can be very dangerous. Anyway, thanks again and keep the job up." I'm not going to even say his name or where he's from because he's taken a risk already. Good job, man. And let's see. We have a happy letter from Alex in Michigan, who managed to have a secular wedding And everything went fine and got no complaints from his relatives and friends and stuff. And apparently it can be done.
Cool. It's a difficult thing to try and figure out exactly how you're going to, you know, do something that this big, involved family event with lots of relatives when your way of doing it, your preferred way of doing it, is dramatically different from theirs.
Right. Well, he expected a lot of flack, but apparently nothing materialized.
Well, one of the things is
good.
You need to have the wedding you want to have.
Oh yeah.
And anybody who's not respectful of that is a piece of crap.
Right.
If they are upset because at your wedding you didn't do things according to their religious views,
screw that.
They're an idiot.
Yeah.
And I really don't see that this – I wouldn't have expected a huge problem anyway, and here's why. In most families, in most big gatherings like this, when you have a wedding, in some there is some fighting, especially if, you know, like you have a Catholic marrying a Jew.
Yeah.
But among, you know, many of the different kind of religious views, you're going to run into this a lot in your life where you're going to go to a wedding for somebody that you care about whose religion is different from yours. And you're not going to approve of their ceremony. And usually it doesn't turn into a big fight because you recognize it's their wedding.
Yeah.
You know, get over it.
Right. And another person writes, this is John, writes a rather effusive letter to us. All sorts of interesting descriptions of us. We're pimpleacious, but you know, he likes us. We get to be included in his list of great things that come out of Texas. Among them are Audie Murphy and his paternal grandparents. But he says, and now I officially add the atheist community of Austin, thus forming a triumvirate of family making, America saving mental giants with balls and ovaries like grapefruit. Zod bless you. So,
praise Zod.
Say Zod.
Kneel before Zod.
So I found that amusing. And Stephen writes, yesterday a Christian sent me a message on MySpace asking me, why do you believe in atheism? And I tried to explain my reasons as best I could. And he goes into his reasons, but I just love the question. Why do you believe in atheism?
Yeah.
Well, gosh, there are people who don't believe in God, so yeah, I believe in atheism. The theists don't even know how to phrase the question.
No.
They don't know what it is.
Had a caller call into the show with almost in the Atheist Experience a couple weeks ago with almost the exact same thing. Mm-hmm. And his thing is, you know, why don't you believe in God? Now, this is slightly different because it was a legitimate question
yeah.
that you could answer. But he's still thinking about it in the wrong terms because the issue isn't why you wouldn't believe in God, but why would you believe
yeah.
in God? You know, it's like saying, why don't you believe in fairies? Okay, I can give you good reasons why I don't. You know, and having thought about fairies and considered the evidence for them, I find that the evidence is lacking and therefore I don't believe. But the question is you obviously believe this is true. I'm more interested in what evidence you have and what reasons you have to justify
your belief.
To justify the belief that you have.
Yeah. I had a weird question from a theist on the on alt atheism, and he asked, talking about God and faith, if you were a God, wouldn't you make it so that your followers would have to believe in you on faith and stuff like that?" And I'm sitting there going, look, the whole question is inarticulate, is incoherent. Because if there's a God out there and it demands that you believe it on faith, then no one will ever know about the God. No one will ever know about it unless it interacts with humanity, which is then which then throws out the whole deal about faith.
Right. A God that expects you to believe something on faith and only on faith is indistinguishable from the non-existence of a God.
Right, and but you wouldn't even know about it.
Yeah.
I mean, you wouldn't even know about the God if it doesn't make its presence known.
Yeah.
And if it makes its presence known, faith is not necessary to believe in it.
Now, if you're if this guy's going to ask questions about what would you do if you were a God, well, first of all, I wouldn't make belief the principal tenet of salvation.
Right.
What a mind accepts as true is largely irrelevant to what that individual does with the knowledge or belief that they have. Our beliefs inform our actions, and the actions are what matter. Right. The actions are all that matter. And this came up in a discussion the other day with somebody who doesn't like the Christian saying, you know, love the sinner, hate the sin. I have no problem at all with that. I can hate the act of murder and the fact that an individual has committed murder and still care about that person. That's the whole purpose behind rehabilitation. You know, one of the reasons is we still think there may be some good left in this individual. You're not inherently a piece of crap. But we do this all the time with family and friends. Your friends do something that annoy you or piss you off or that bug the hell out of you. You hate the act, but you don't start hating the person. It's natural. I don't have too much of a problem with it. Where I disagree with Christians with their love the sinner, hate the sin is most of the time when they say that, they're talking about something that I don't think is a sin in the first place. Usually they're talking about, you know, homosexuality or, you know, abortion or whatever, lying. Their notion of sin, while in the case of maybe lying and stealing, I can see that these are wrong things. But the notion that it's intrinsically wrong, that it is, you know, defined as wrong by some authority, you know, on high, it's just asinine.
Yep. Let's see, John writes, he called in to chat with Todd Friel. Apparently, he's the retarded monkey on the Way of the Master, hired to host their silly little radio program. He says, I had called on the show to question him about the holiness of God, since in a previous program he had said that our purpose was to glorify God, which is just silly. What does he need glory for? Is he trying to impress someone? Anyway, I got Todd to admit on the air...
It's kind of like saying that the purpose of your child is to love you.
Right.
Whoa. I had a baby just so he would love
me. That's
his whole purpose in life is to clean my house.
Sick and creepy. Yes. I got Todd to admit on the air that God does what he does just because he is God and he can. Nah, poo-poo. If that weren't enough, the show was at an end, so he put me on hold, after which I kept him on the line for about an hour. We had an interesting discussion, and I thought I'd share his parting words with you, since you used straw man last week for the intro. Right. That was the one before that. All right. Todd, the genius that he is, has figured us all out. He's done it. We can stop hating God now because they're on to us. And he said that he believes I'm an atheist because I love sin so much that I am unwilling to give it up, and therefore must reject God because I'm afraid of his wrath. Bingo! That's it, isn't it? He's right, yeah?
Yeah. I'm curious about what sin exactly he loves so much.
Liking God.
What sin am I doing? I don't know.
It's delightfully circular.
Apostasy.
I'm reminded of another essay by Jim Huber, who also did Kissing Hank's Ass, where he made up a story where somebody decided that skiing was wrong, and went around harassing people who were who just wanted to go skiing.
Right. And since we were talking about weird religious law schools and stuff like that, Nathan writes in, expressing his displeasure at them. He says, the fake law schools really bug me. They diminish the value of real degrees from accredited schools. I'm especially annoyed that students at these ridiculous law schools seem to have an easier path into government employment than students at reputable schools who work much harder to actually understand the law.
Yeah, imagine that.
Yeah. And so he brings highlights up. Louisiana College in Pineville plans to announce today its desire to open a biblical worldview law school, with classes starting in 2009. Oh, boy.
Dennis, do you have a letter from Nate? He's complaining in the chat room. Did you ever read his stuff?
Good grief. I have too many to actually look for a single name.
Now I'm encouraging people to actually complain about not getting their letters read, and then they'll
That's a bad sign.
Yeah, it's a bad policy. Sorry,
Nate.
That's
a bad policy. Let's see.
Maybe we're not even getting his letters.
I don't know. Let's see. We get one from Australia. Sounds like. It starts, g'day. And,
it's either an Australian or a horrible poser.
Did we talk about John Safran versus God? Or was, oh, that was on the TV show. Mm. He's writing about the TV show.
Oh, you just read Nate's letter.
Did I? Okay,
oh,
cool.
Okay, then.
Cool.
That gets you off the hook for the complainers?
Right, right.
The funny thing is that some of the letters that we get, we actually just respond to off the air.
Off, yeah, online.
And some of those end up still getting read online, and some of them don't.
Ah, now this is someone who writes to give us some interesting information. This is Christine. She writes and says, on the latest show, you mentioned a couple items I can offer a little information on. The Duggars, the kids who had, the people who had 17 children.
Yeah.
Right. It appears from the coverage of the family on TLC that you are right on the money. Older children are assigned a buddy, read foster child, to take care of, freeing up the parents to pump out more infants and perfect their recipe for tater tot casserole. And,
It's like
yeah.
a pyramid scheme.
Yeah. Pretty soon you'll have 10,000 children.
Well, I think one of the things about this, and these people in particular, it demonstrates one of the problems with dogmatic beliefs.
Uh-huh.
Their belief is that they are commanded to be fruitful and multiply, to keep having kids, whether or not it's a good idea. It
right.
must, by definition,
be a good idea
because
God's
commanded. Now, the only practical solution, since they can't really spend time with
an infinite number of children,
they can't really spend quality time with all 17 of their children, is
right.
to let the children raise the children.
Right. This can't.
They've
be
come
good.
Up with the only mechanism that works that you know makes, and they homeschool and they're you know kind of a close knit family and everything else, and it works. But the reason it works, in part, is because the children have been so isolated that and been brought up to uh-huh. believe that this is normal and this is the way it's supposed to work and this is the way God wants it to work.
Do their kids go to school?
Homeschool.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
They've been brought up to believe all that this is the way things are supposed to be. And I'm not making an argument about what ought to be with regard to a family. But what I am saying is that we could look at the situation and analyze how rational, balanced, well-adjusted individuals are based on how they were raised. And even if it turned out that children from families of 17 mm-hmm. were the most well-balanced and productive members of society, that still doesn't make it a good idea. Because if everybody ran around having 17 kids, we would have run out of resources a long frickin' time ago.
Yep.
Although, maybe having 17 kids is how they managed to populate the earth so quickly between the time of the flood and the Tower of Babel.
Right,
you
right.
know, because otherwise, by under any rational standards,
right.
you don't have a couple thousand people to try and build this tower and do everything else on the planet.
But yeah. if the earth really was populated that fast, then the math dictates that, like, you know, in 30 years we're going to have, you know, 100 billion people.
Right. Yeah. Now, Christine also adds, the girl dragged by a van at a boot camp. You talked about why the camp officials wouldn't want people to work together or possibly why people wouldn't be kicked out like in a real boot camp if they couldn't make the grade. What you're missing is that these are programs meant to straighten out problem teenagers. Of course, what a problem teenager is depends totally on the parent's interpretation. Could be a gay kid, an atheist, or a kid who smoked a marijuana cigarette. Since these are not necessarily part of the juvenile justice system, though sadly I think they are used as that sometimes, moreover, the professionals like to whip parents into a frenzy over even minor infractions since it's in their financial interests to have the parents commit the child to their care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, yeah. I realize that they can't be kind of let out of this and everything else, but when your rehabilitation program is worse than the U.S. military,
yeah,
and worse than prisons, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
If you're dragging kids with a truck and they're not in some kind of fun mobile behind it,
right?
You might be an asshat.
Yep.
Last one.
Oh no.
Last one. Then we got to close this out.
Let's see.
Predominantly.
That's the best new best letter I've ever heard.
I'm just humming. I'm trying to prevent dead air. You guys talk among yourselves.
Well, there was this. no, I don't have time for that.
Okay, listening to the podcast while I write this, and you were talking about profanity. My sister, who is very religious, uses the word smit and flip regularly instead of shit and fuck. I have often seen this kind of hypocrisy with the very religious. They can't seem to grasp that words are human constructs. It's the context in which they are used to give them power. Well, when my sister says, I don't give a flip, it's obvious that she really means, you know, I don't give a fuck.
I use comically exaggerated language that isn't swearing when I'm talking to somebody that I think might be bothered by swearing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not hypocrisy. She just is someone who's bothered by swearing.
Well, if in this case, I think we're talking about something slightly different.
Yeah.
There's one thing about being audience appropriate.
Right.
We will occasionally throw some profanity on the show. Some shows have more profanity than others.
Occasionally.
I don't come on here with the intent of, oh, cool, I'm free to say everything, so I can say fuck as many times as I want. That's not how it goes. It just, I don't try to rein myself in as much on this show, because we've learned from experience that while there are some people who object, there are a lot of people in our audience who actually appreciate it. The fact that we're going to go off on an impassioned rant that may include profanity, because some of them aren't able to do it. They're not in cities that would where it would be, or in family environments where it would be allowed, tolerated.
Right.
But on the Atheist Experience TV show, I don't. Even though I'm not under FCC requirements, it's public access, I could say whatever I want. The audience there is different. This is a show that we're sending out to the general public.
Right.
And while somebody could easily claim that I'm being two-faced by doing that, in fact, I think that I'm just being audience appropriate, that I'm considerate.
Being considerate.
The person who writes in about their sister, who that person constantly substitutes made-up words for the words that they want to say but won't.
Right.
And they're not being appropriate to their audience. They are in fear of a god. They are, oh, this is a sin if I say these words, so I'll say these other ones anyway, even though I mean right. The same thing. My self-censorship is never out of fear that some god might smite me.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I invite it. Smite me on the air.
You fuckhead.
Yeah. You asshats. But, you know, because there's, by the way, I love that there was this guy who did a webcast like once a month or so that was the Smite Cam, where he would just go on and read blasphemies and just to see if he got smited month after month after month after month. It was awesome. I wish I'd have thought of it. But, you know, maybe that's when, at the end of each show.
You know what the solution is for that sister? She needs to watch Firefly and then learn some Chinese.
Yes.
That's right. Or what was it in the old Battlestar Galactica with Frack? And
oh, the new Battlestar Galactica.
And the new Battlestar Galactica. Right.
Yeah.
And stuff.
So that's one thing we ought to do at the end of each show, and since there's three of us here, we can all do it. And then if he only smites one of us, the others will be able to test to the power of God. So, you know, we got to be careful about what kind of smiting we call for, because, you know, if it's like, oh, electrocute me. I mean, there's lots of wires running around here. It doesn't take an act of God to get electrocuted in my room.
So, how about a two-ton weight on the head?
How about an invisible... A visible cloud of toxic gas that centers only on the one person.
Sure.
And suffocates
them. I hope it's you and not me.
So come on, suffocate me, big boy.
That's right.
All right.
Please, God.
Yeah, fuck you. I don't think you have the guts.
Strike Matt dead. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. Wherever two or more of you are gathered together in my name. So if you guys get together and ask God to smite me, maybe he will.
Yeah, but we have to be followers, don't we?
I'm pretty sure that if prayer worked, I would have already been smited.
I think we should ask our listeners to join in a call for prayer to pray that by the next show, Matt is dead.
No, because that's a whole 2 weeks with all kinds of opportunities and some nut job with a gun. That's why it's got to be, you know, kind of specific.
Immediate. By the end of the show, which is like in 1 minute.
Anyway, close us out.
Do I get to close it?
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's our show. Because if it isn't, we've really been fooling ourselves. And we'll be back in 2 weeks to cure cancer. And because it would be silly the other way around, I'm Dennis Lubay.
I'm Matt Delaney.
And I'm Russell Glasser.
Bye-bye.